From the latest on Caribbean cruises to kosher safaris, pilgrimages to Jewish Eastern Europe and award-winning wines and international cuisine in sun-drenched Tel Aviv, sit back and enjoy the trip with the travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.
Welcome to the first ever travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast. I'm Mark Gordon, and here's my travel buddy, David Harris.
Mark, thanks very much, and a welcome from me as well. Over the coming weeks, we'll bring you destinations worldwide, and of course, detailing Jewish locations, Israeli tourism, kosher travel, and so much more.
On this first edition, we take you to New Orleans for some kosher gumbo, and we visit a newly reopened museum in Copenhagen.
To get you in the mood for each destination, we'll give you a quiz question.
And here's our first question. Which building in New Orleans is the world's largest steel-constructed room, unobstructed by poles?
And we call them Danish pastries, but what are they called in Denmark?
We'll give you the answers at the end of the show. Around 18 million people visit New Orleans each year. Most come for the music, the food, and the great street atmosphere. For the lowdown on the Big Easy and Jewish tourism in the city, we spoke with professional guide Roni Bosin, who owns the Wandering Crew Tour Company.
I've had a one-man show tour company for the last few years. It's called the Wandering Crew, so it's kind of based on the Wandering Jew, obviously. But the spelling in this case is crew, K-R-E-W-E. And that is based on English spelling of or British spelling of the word crew. And this is because the different Mardi Gras parades that we have in New Orleans are all called crews. So you can belong to a crew. It's spelled K-R-E-W-E. So that is my play on that. For the past 20-something years, there's been a Jewish crew called Crew de Jew or Crew de Jew, which is spelled J-I-E-U-X, which is the New Orleans or French way of spelling it. As you know how when you have two Jews and three opinions? So they had some argument within Crew de Jew, and now there's another one called Crew de Michigas.
How did you end up in Louisiana?
7 years ago, I went to visit a friend of mine that had just moved from New Jersey to New Orleans. And as soon as I got off the plane, I felt like something was different and great compared to other places in the U.S. I've been to. Everybody was warm and friendly, and they had time to stop and talk to you and tell their stories and hear your stories. It just gave me a really, really good feeling. So I decided I would come back at some point to New Orleans. In the few years that went by since, and I had this idea that I had anyway from a long time ago of being a tour guide, and I decided there's no better place to do that than New Orleans.
There's one time in the year where visitor numbers are guaranteed to peak, and that, of course, is Mardi Gras. Would you say that's a good period to visit the city or a time to stay away?
It depends. So Mardi Gras is a very, very busy week. Here's the thing. If you are willing to be engaged only in Mardi Gras, that is a great time to come to the city. It's great weather. The few days leading up to Mardi Gras Day itself, which means in French, Fat Tuesday, everybody's dressed up. They're in good spirits. But if you want to do something else, like being a tour guide, for example, and I learned this the hard way, you can't really do anything. Definitely not on the day of, that I've never done, and nobody can really do anything because like there's hundreds of parades, official and non-official, all over the city the day before that and even a few days before that. So if you're the kind of person that wants to be engaged in it, you like dressing up, you like partying, you like talking to people, you like basically being a free spirit, that is the best time to come to New Orleans. If you are not really into that or if you want to get away from the city, that's probably not the best time. But I can also tell you that Mardi Gras season is a long season. It's not just that Mardi Gras week. And it's a great time to come to New Orleans if you want to go to more low-key parades and low-key events. And the season always starts on January 6th, which is 12th night as far as religion is concerned. But also January 6th, aside from it being 12th night, happens to be the birthday of Joan of Arc. And there is a Joan of Arc statue in New Orleans of her sitting. It's all made of gold, and she's sitting on the horse. And the very first parade of the Mardi Gras season, because of this, is the Joan of Arc parade. Somebody climbs up to the horse and puts some beads on her neck. In New Orleans, we don't call her Joan of Arc. Because she sits on a horse, everybody calls her Joanie on a pony.
Tell us a little bit about the Jewish tourism in the area.
There's several synagogues, one of which is the oldest synagogue outside of those original 13 British colonies, and that is Toro Synagogue. It is connected to Toro Synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island, which is the oldest synagogue in the U.S. There are old buildings that are relevant to the Jewish history. There's a beautiful Yaakov Agam Holocaust Memorial that's been there since 2003. And the way it's built, it's a bunch of different panels. When you walk around, you'll see various depictions of symbols of the Holocaust. The Toro family from Newport, Rhode Island. So one of them was Judah Toro, and he left the Massachusetts, and he comes to New Orleans in 1801, which is a couple of years before the Louisiana Purchase. It wasn't even American yet. It was Spanish and then French again and then American. And he makes his money in real estate and shipping, export, import, that kind of thing. And he was a bachelor. And towards the end of his life, he kind of connected to somebody who was even more involved in Judaism. And his name was Gershom Kershet. And he gets a little bit more involved in the Jewish community there. And at some point in his will, which is in the 1850s, he states in his will that $50,000 of his estate will go to the use of the poor Jews of Jerusalem to be utilized by Moses Montefiore. But what they end up doing with that money is they built the very first neighborhood outside of the Jerusalem city walls, and that's Mishkanot Sha'ananim. If you go to Mishkanot Sha'ananim, there's a spot there where there's a plaque in stone, and it's written there, New Orleans, Yud Ein Aleph, which is Yagen Alea Elohim, or God will protect her, New Orleans. Obviously, with all the hurricanes and all that, that's a good blessing to have.
A lot of the New Orleans scene is about food and foods like Creole, gumbo. A lot of it is very much seafood and meat. How can a kosher traveler experience some of the genuine flavors of New Orleans?
It really depends how kosher you are. If you are okay with, for example, eating vegan, but obviously there's no certificate of kosher, you can go to a place called Sweet Soul Food, and it's basically vegan food run by an African-American owner. And it's all the stuff you would want to have in New Orleans, like gumbo and jambalaya, and you'll have it. It's vegan. So there's nothing non-kosher there, but there's no certificate. Now, if you go one level up, probably the most famous food institution in New Orleans, arguably, is Café du Monde, which has been around since basically 1862, right when the Union Army takes control of New Orleans. Kind of a strange time to start a business. But anyway, they've been open since. And what they have there is café au lait, which is basically hot coffee, chicory with chicory and hot milk, and beignets. And beignets is really fried dough. And beignets is kind of like, if you guys know what a sphinge is, which is what Moroccans and Algerian Jews will have during a Hanukkah. It's very similar because we have the French influence in Algiers and Morocco as well. But anyway, since 2008, Café du Monde has had a kosher certificate from the LKC, which is the Louisiana Kosher Committee. Now, if we step on up another level, the most probably authentic Jewish New Orleans, sorry, Louisiana kosher place is a place called Kosher Cajuns. And this is a place in Metairie, which is a suburb of New Orleans. And you can have all kinds of local food there that is kosher. For example, a shrimp po' boy, which is obviously not a shrimp. It's made of, I believe, Alaska fish.
Beyond New Orleans, what is there in Louisiana for visitors?
The most popular thing to do in Louisiana outside of New Orleans is the swamp tours. All of Louisiana or great parts of Louisiana are swamps and marshes, and there's over 2 million gators in Louisiana.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's really great swamp tours that you go either on an airboat, which is, if you've ever seen, like, in the Everglades, that boat with a big ventilator in the back, or in one of those slow boats, which you can, sometimes the animals come even closer because it's quiet. So those are great tours to take. You can also go down to the Gulf of Mexico. So a lot of people don't know this, that even though New Orleans is officially a port town, it is actually 90 miles or 150 kilometers above the Gulf of Mexico. So you still have another 90 miles downriver all the way to the Gulf. And there's a place there called Venice, Louisiana, which is beautiful. You see the Gulf. You can go fishing there or just like look at the sights. So that's a great place to go as well. And you can go to Cajun country, which is areas like Lafayette or Abbeville. And Cajun country is, they got a lot of great music. Zydeco, which sometimes reminds me of Balkan music. And the Cajuns are another type of French people that ended up in Louisiana. You have Creoles and you have Cajuns.
Is the weather always hot and humid in New Orleans?
Well, the simple answer is yes. It's always hot and humid. But there are some days in the winter that it can get really, really cold, and you feel it even more because of the humidity. But as far as seasons that are not like ridiculously hot and humid, the best seasons to come are around Halloween time. And Halloween is, by the way, the second favorite holiday in New Orleans. So more or less end of September, beginning of October toward to November, it's pretty good weather. And then your next season is basically the Mardi Gras season, pretty much more or less February all the way to June. But I would say May and June already starts getting pretty hot. But those are your windows for when it's not always like ridiculously hot and humid.
Just to wrap up, how can people get more details about your tours?
The best way to reach me is my website, thewanderingcrew.com. So crew, remember, K-R-E-W-E. Just want to let people know that my tours now are virtual. So what I do is a kind of an immersive experience that combines PowerPoint slides with photos, Google Earth, which is a technology that enables you to feel like you're traveling from place to place, and my live storytelling.
Roni Bossin, the Wandering Crew owner and tour guide. It's been a wonderful tour virtually of Louisiana and New Orleans. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mark and David. It has been a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
The New Orleans Fact File. Domestically, American, Delta, Frontier, Spirit, United, and Southwest all serve Louis Armstrong International Airport in New Orleans. Air Canada flies in from Toronto and BA from London. The 20-minute taxi ride from the airport costs around $33, while a shared shuttle is about $15. For accommodation, tour guide Roni Bossin recommends the Bourbon Orleans, Bienville House, Le Marais, Mazarin, Provincial, and Andrew Jackson. Sustainable French Quarter hotels can be found on neworleans.com. Recommended museums include the World War II Museum, the Louisiana State, and the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. The Chabad Louisiana website details kosher restaurants and religious services.
And now here's the latest Jerusalem Post podcast travel news.
American Airlines announced it'll start flying from New York to Tel Aviv from May 6th. You can already start booking your trip. American is planning a Dallas-Fort Worth-Tel Aviv route later this year.
Tel Aviv's Ben-Gurion International Airport remains closed for the time being because of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Israeli government initially imposed a one-week closure, but with fears over the new strains of the virus, Ben-Gurion could stay closed for up to 5 weeks.
US President Joe Biden reinstated coronavirus travel restrictions for individuals traveling to America from the UK, Ireland, South Africa, Brazil, and the Schengen area of Europe.
And now some good news on the COVID front. Seychelles welcomes visitors from any part of the world, provided they have been vaccinated.
As the song goes, Copenhagen really is a wonderful city. It's an ideal launching point to Europe for visitors from North America, and just a short hop from the rest of Europe and Israel. In addition to the classic tourist attractions like the Tivoli Gardens and the Little Mermaid, the city's National Museum tells the story of the miraculous escape of nearly all of Denmark's Jewish community in 1943. Mette Boritz is curator at the Museum of Danish Resistance.
For the first 3 years of the German occupation, from 1940 to 1943, we still had a government here in Denmark, and the politicians were doing their normal business. So we did have a sort of agreement with the Germany occupation that the parliament could still exist here in Denmark. But they became more and more strict with regulations from the Germans. And in 1943, the government did not exist anymore. And then it was the more and more German occupation and more different rights. But Denmark was a little bit different than other countries during the Second World War in relation to the Germans. they were not so strict on us because Denmark is very close to Germany and we are a small country, so they didn't have so many interests in Denmark.
One of the main activities of the resistance was saving nearly all of Denmark's Jewish population. How does your museum tell that story?
The Danish resistance and a lot of other Danes, not only the resistance fighters, but a lot of ordinary Danes, families, etc., helped many Jews escape during the Second World War. In 1943, on the 1st of October, the Germans started to take Jews. The idea was to send them to concentration camps in Germany. Before that, they had an ordinary status here in Denmark as ordinary citizens. And the Danes were really trying to save the Jews and let them stay here in Denmark. But when the government didn't exist anymore here in Denmark, the Germans started to take the Jews. And that way, many resistance fighters and members of the resistance tried to help Jews escape to Sweden, because Sweden was a neutral country. A lot of Jews here in Copenhagen were quite poor in those days, and it costed money to take a boat over to Sweden. And some of the members of the resistance trying to raise money for the Jews to go over to Sweden. Others helped them escape, trying to find fishermen that were ready to take them over. In our museum, we have a special boat, one of the original boats that were transporting Jews to Sweden. It has a very special story, and not so long ago, we actually found the family of one of the Jewish families that joined that boat, and they were called Steinbock. I found Abraham Steinbock. He was the one that bought the boat from a fisherman south of Copenhagen to take his and another family over to Sweden. And we found his daughter, and she could tell us the exact story because her father did his memoirs.
I have to interrupt you at this point and ask you, was the name of the daughter Aviva?
Yes.
She's my cousin.
It is?
That's me, yeah. Her Avraham's wife was my mother's second cousin.
Ah, how funny.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, and I have seen a lot to Aviva during the last month, so... Oh, how funny.
Wow. It's a small world, and we say in the Jewish world is even smaller, of course.
Yes, and actually, because we did have the boat, and we only had a small newspaper article about Abraham, and when we were going to exhibit the boat and have the boat into the exhibition, I said we must have a picture of the family that joined, or of Abraham, because we wanted to tell his story. So I just took a Google search and found that she was living here in Copenhagen.
The museum was rocked by a fire in 2013. How much damage did that cause to the museum and your ability to tell this and other stories?
It caused a huge damage to the building. The fire was destroying the building of the old museum, but fortunately the fire workers rescued all the objects and the archives, and nobody was harmed by the fire. So it was only a building. And a few days after the fire, former Prime Minister of Denmark came out and said, we are going to build a new museum. It's going to be in the exact same place. And then our job started. A lot of young people doesn't know the story. They don't have grandparents and parents that can tell them that story. So we wanted to, in our new museum, to tell the story to a new generation of people that do not have the family connection to the world anymore.
So is the museum suitable for children and families?
It's not for very small children, because it's a complicated story about Nazism, communism, about people getting killed, and about resistance fighters that were fighting for very different reasons and with different backgrounds. But it's for young people, and it's for tourists as well, because the museum is in the center of Copenhagen, and many foreigners know a little bit about the Danes helped the Jews escape during the Second World War, but they don't know much about Denmark's position during the Second World War. So we actually help also people, foreigners, to come to the museum and learn about how the Second World War were in Denmark.
How long does a tour of the museum take normally?
We planned that it should be a normal museum walk, but we have learned during the last months we have been open that many people spend 2 or 3 hours at the museum, and it's not quite big. It's a very small museum, 800 square meters of exhibition, but people use quite a lot of time there and listen to lots of story, because of course we have amazing objects, archive material in our museum, but we also tell story about people during the Second World War, about resistance fighters. We use their own words and their own stories. You can follow 5 different persons, 4 men and a woman. And you can also listen to special stories like the one about the boat sailing to Sweden with the Jewish families.
So if I'm visiting Copenhagen for the weekend, how easy is the museum to get to?
It's very easy to get to because it's in the center. It's you can say it's between the Little Mermaid and the Queen's Castle. So it's right in the center of many of the other things that tourists normally will come to see. Of course, everything is in English, so everybody can join and listen. All the stories are also translated into English. So it's very easy to see the museum and follow the stories.
Mette Boritz, curator at the Museum of Danish Resistance, we thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
You can find out more at the website, which is at en.natmus, like National Museum, natmus.dk. That's en.natmus.dk. And if that's a bit difficult for you, then you can always Google it and look for the Museum of Danish Resistance. Mette, again, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mette.
You're welcome.
And now, our Copenhagen fact file. SAS offers direct flights to Copenhagen from New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. From Israel, you can fly direct to Copenhagen with Norwegian. It takes around 20 minutes in a taxi from the airport to downtown. It costs around $35. 15 minutes by metro for $6. Visit Denmark recommends the brand new sustainable luxury hotel Villa Copenhagen next to the central station, around $250 per night for a double room. At $100 is the Hotel Danmark by the City Hall Square. The currency is the Danish kroner. 100 Danish kroner will cost you around $15.50. Chabad of Denmark provides catered kosher food and hosts Shabbat meals. It also runs the Taim kosher restaurant. And now for the quiz answers. Which building in New Orleans is the world's largest steel constructed room unobstructed by poles? The answer was the Superdome.
And we call them Danish pastries, but what are they called in Denmark? And the answer is wienerbrød or Viennese bread.
Well, that's it for our maiden voyage. Our thanks to Roni and Mette. Please remember to give us a positive review and a 5-star rating with your podcast provider. Join us next time for more adventures with the Travel Edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.